Hey, thanks to Good Bear Passport for supporting Heritage Radio Network. Get your Good Bear Passport now to explore some of New York's best craft beers. Learn more at goodpassports.com, a supporter of New York City's July Good Beer Month.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's June 13th, 2017, and we got the New York City beer reps in the house. All right. Everybody, hello. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Let's do that again. We got the New York City beer reps in the house.
What's up, man?
What's going on?
Hello.
All right.
Hey,
and it's officially hot today, and it's time for summer brews, so we got a lot to talk about today at Heritage Radio Network. You know, cut to the chase, Caitlin from Long Island City Beer Project, you're on a few weeks ago, and we talked about a show idea, and you said, what, we should have a show about?
Beer reps.
Beer reps. So who did you bring in today?
I have my coworker, Tom. I have Jay from Interborough. And then we have the ski rep.
Keith from SKI Beer Distributors.
SKI.
Yep. Let's talk into it, yeah.
Yeah, Keith from SKI Beer Distributors.
And our new buddy.
Johnny Compton with Highway Manor Brewing Company.
Yeah. So, you know, it's time to talk about things that you guys do in every day and week to week, selling beer. And it's neat because you're all pretty different breweries and unique breweries. We'll get to taste your beer on the show. And Jay, you know, you are our senior guest. You've been on the show many times over the years. You've worked with great brands from Carton and so many others, and now you're the main Interborough.
Well, it's been fun. Thank you for having me back, Jimmy.
Yeah, so tell us what we're drinking first so we can get that on the air.
First, we're trying from us the Premier IPA. This is a canned item I brought in today. We launched our brewery about 10 months ago, brewery distillery 10 months ago, and on our opening day, we released this beer, and it's a 7% IPA, hazy and juicy with Citra, Mosaic, and Galaxy hops. And this is the double dry hop version of that we released this past Thursday, with some mosaic dust in it, you know, the kind of hash of hops.
So let's start with Caitlin and Jay. You know, what does it take to sell beer in New York City? Like, just give us a little bit of background and, you know, what you're up against sometimes.
I think for both of us, we work directly for our small breweries. So not saying there's anything wrong with it, but we do have to compete with distributors and yeah, it can be a little tough sometimes, but I think you have a good product.
That's where you got to start. Good product. Dealing with nice people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, Jay, you've been selling beer for how many years in New York? 10 years, 15 years?
12, I think. 12 so far.
Yeah.
It's been a fun run.
You know your stuff. Everybody. And Thomas, too. So Thomas from LIC Beer Project. Tell us about what you've been up to.
Yeah. So Caitlin's Brooklyn, Queens. I'm Manhattan, so stomping around the streets, trying to sell beer. Yeah, start with good beer, convince people who
you... But, you know, with so many new breweries, I get emails every week, and you guys send out great ones, and there comes a time when I don't really know what they are, what they're going to be like, and you gave me a tasting recently.
Sure.
It's like, what's your approach to an account like me when I say I can't figure out what beers you have, and I want to taste them?
Yeah, so we primarily focus on farmhouse beer, Saison, so it's carved out a bit of a niche, so going into a place like yours where, or any bar really, where it's IPA heavy, it's pretty easy to sell somebody on a nice, you know, mixed fermentation saison or clean saison in that matter. So just figuring out what's on and what, you know, where we can direct the sales call and see what people need. Yeah. So,
and Jay, do you find that there's an instant demand for all your new beers?
I think there's a general mix of things. I think there were, right when we opened, there were a lot of curiosity seekers because we are local, and I think there are a lot of people that are interested in locally based products. But then from the beers that have been released thus far, I feel like we have put out a lot of IPAs, and there's, you know, I think we're focused in on a lot of like double IPAs, and we've also done stuff that's more like 6 to 7%, which I think is kind of the sweet spot for drinking. But then we've done session IPAs, and then we've made other things. Like, we've put out a lot of Pilsner, and we've done dark beers when the weather was cooler, and we've done Saison. And we want to make sure we have a range of things to offer, but also, you know, there is a big demand for IPA, and our brewer, Jesse, is really well putting together some great beers, and you know, they're meant to be drank fresh, and so getting those out the door quickly, I think, is part of it.
I'll tell you, fresh good beer, I want that more than ever. This weekend, yeah. I don't say what I was doing, but I was at a festival, and they had an okay German Pils, and they had like an AB Belgian Pils, and I was so bummed because I just wanted some good beer, you know, when I was out. And then Keith, you guys, SKI, so you know, you just recently launched Highway Manor, and Johnny, we had you at Jimmy's number 43 a few weeks ago. You know, what's it like for you guys? You're always pushing a new brand.
I mean, it's really a whole separate story. We just have a very large portfolio, and we have to make an honest attempt to cover all of our brands and push as much as we can. We have our craft brands, we have our larger brands, and it's a matter of, honestly, on our side, numbers. We need to sell as much beer as we can. So certain breweries we can sell more beer of. So it's a bit more of a numbers game. I don't like to say it's a little less focused on the actual taste itself. Obviously, I like to sell what I like to drink. However, it's a bit less focused than the reps, like these guys here who focus on their specific brand. And it can really focus on exactly what they're selling, what they're making, and give true focus to those beers.
Johnny, how did you approach, you know, you came to New York City, you're in Pennsylvania, and how did you approach launching your brand here and some of the events you did?
Well,
this is great, Jay. I love this beer. Into brew.
I've been brewing beer for about 17 years and then sour beer for about the last 7 or 8, and it's been a passion project that didn't really get legs, to say. For a while, I had my entrepreneurial nuts kicked in that I lost... I lost a family steel business and then had to kind of get my feet back underneath me. And it took a while to get traction. Went through divorce the same week, too. So get traction back in my own life. And in doing that, I ended
up... Got out of steel at the right time? That's dumb.
I got in it at the wrong time.
Oh, yeah?
Now things are... I mean, I'm not...
What's a family steel business? What does that mean?
We're still in it. We're still walking the steel, but we used to fabricate the iron. So we did everything from miscellaneous to structural steel, and we did a... you know, large skyscrapers anywhere we could, and we had a 20 ton a day of steel and 70 employees, and I had a lot of work going on. That sales is what I did best, in that I had you bid the work and then you get the meetings, and then making a $2.7 million sale versus a $110 keg where I'm at now is a night and day difference, and the high fives aren't quite as hard as they used to be. I'll just put it that way. But getting into beer, back to beer, I realized I had a niche in the sour thing, and I had a savant feel to what I was doing. So people were really encouraging me, especially in this market in New York, because I went around with a homebrew cooler when I was in my entrepreneurial nutless phase, with a homebrew cooler, just kind of saying to people, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? What do you think of that? And just testing the market to see where sours were going. And then in the last, 18, 20 months, there's been a resurgence where sours has become like the new thing everybody's after. The kettle thing happened to me. I didn't see that coming. And so I went from the original business model was just me making these really incredible beers at my house by myself and putting them into like boutique shops and making enough money just to keep my mortgage and real simple, to we moved to a production facility. We're doing production only. We do 10 barrel batches. We have, you know, I forget how many oak barrels. We have blending tanks. We have a Solera project. We have a whole lot more layers to the onion than I ever planned on producing. And in doing that, you know, you take on more responsibility in the sales end. And then if without sales, you don't have a business. So being a business owner and realizing that, you know, I hired a sales guy. We had a falling out after a little bit. So I ended up bringing a brewer in, someone to make the wort and keep up with the cultures and everything like that, and I hit the street. So I started that in about October. I'd done sales and training him up until then, but in October it became kind of my full-time gig. We launched New York City in December. We'd self-distributed in Philadelphia until December as well. So we didn't get any distribution deals going until December. Working with the distributor has been a blessing. SKI has been amazing for us. But when you're doing it on your own, I have that experience as well, like you guys do, of self-distributing in Philadelphia market, which is a very, very competitive market, especially with sour beer. And we've gained a lot of traction. I think what I love to do is let people taste the liquid. So I'm forever pouring beer. I'm telling my guys, you can't have enough samples. Get people to drink the beer. Get them to taste it, because we believe in the liquid. We believe what we're doing is another layer. It's proprietary yeast. It's a different animal than everybody else is working with, and we want people to try it because you don't know our beers until you have them. So that's
Jay's,
kind of
Jay's nodding over there.
There's only one way to know.
Yeah.
That's to drink it.
Well, your eyes can lie, your ears can lie, but your taste can't lie.
That's true.
Jay, when you used to work this distributed American for years, what were some of the new brands that you rolled out, and you know, what was your approach to that?
When I started working there, they had just signed Captain Lawrence. They also were dealing with like the Shelton Brother portfolio when I started in there, and then we had brands like Avery from Colorado. But then over time, we signed some companies like Dark Horse and Carton and Grimm and McNeil's from up in Vermont.
Yeah, Ray McNeil.
Ray McNeil. Did you ever have him in here?
We had him at one of our Beer Week events, New York City Brewers Choice.
Yeah. Ray's great. He's such a character. But yeah, it was an interesting era, I guess, for the beer drinking community, because there was a lot of stuff coming online. There's a lot of breweries open now in the last, say, 10 years, obviously, but you know, the landscape here was different. The larger distributors, you know, were not vying as hard for smaller brands at the time. And so we were trying to do something, you know, a platform for smaller companies that, you know, wanted to get access into New York. But also it was hard to go after draft lines at restaurants that were like, there's fine dining out there that, like, even to this day, their wine selection or is very astute, and yet they still, you know, kind of have middle of the road stuff, while there's, you know, real value and flavor and you know, the purchasing power of a restaurant like that. It was just you know, the world's slowly changing, but back then it was a little bit of a different landscape, but it was newer to a lot of people. And I feel like now my opinion is that the consumers are a lot more educated and involved, and they're actually chasing it down, and they want to know the process and the ingredients going in and everything. And so with an educated consumer, they're more open-minded. And I think also the other opinion I've kind of developed is that people are looking more at styles and saying, I like sour beers. You know what I mean? And so if they've enjoyed some from some manufacturer, they're more open-minded to go try it from somebody else, because they know they like the style, much like wine, as opposed to being like, I just like that brand. And I think that's a really good development that's occurred.
And what's the next beer you
brew? We're trying a beer we just released on Thursday called Louder Than a Bomb. It's an 8% IPA, and we just dropped cans on Thursday, and they were actually kegging up the remainder of it to sell this week. So, want some, Jimmy?
I love it. It's pretty good.
All right. I'll send some your way. So, that's on the air.
Let's make a toast to everybody. Hey. And then, you know, Caitlin and Thomas, so you guys at LIC Beer Project, talking about sours and IPAs. You guys make both sours and IPAs.
So, yeah, we do. Started with a Belgian feel, like I alluded to earlier, saisons and wild beers. Waited on a hop contract that we were kind of working on for a while and secured that. So, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, we really started hitting the IPAs hard. And that has definitely been paying the bills. And it enables us to buy more oak, enables us to buy more tanks. We just brought in 2 new 20s that are going to be sour tanks. So the IPAs, while I love to drink them and they're fun to make, the wild beers is kind of our focus, and we're trying to keep that alive.
That's great. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Talk more about this stuff. Cool. All right. Woo. Hey. Good Beer Passport is a supporter of today's show. Get your Good Beer Passport now, and you'll be able to enjoy draft beers and flights at some of the city's best bars and breweries all summer long. They're only $37 each and redeemable between July 1st and September 4th. A portion of the proceeds benefit God's Love We Deliver and Heritage Radio Network. That's us. Learn more at goodpassports.com, a supporter of New York City's July Good Beer Month. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Wow, man. We're talking New York City beer sales. We got reps from Interborough, LIC Beer Project, and Johnny himself from Highway Manor in Pennsylvania. So Kaylee just asked a good question. You know, the fun part of all these new beers are the names. So what was your question for Jay about the Interborough
beer? I was asking where it came from because I usually know where Jesse gets his names from.
Jesse names a lot of these beers from hip-hop lyrics because he helped run a record label called Definitive Jux in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so he lifts lyrics sometimes, not song titles or, you know, album titles, but he kind of pulls them out. I don't know. I don't have the answer for you. Give me 5 minutes and I'll tell you. It's probably slacked on our internal.
I'm going to say it's a Smith song, Louder Than Bomb, is kind of what it's based on my knowledge of Morrissey, but I could be wrong.
Well, they're usually.
That's louder than bombs. This is louder than a bomb.
When you're selling beer.
There's a difference.
Wait, hold on.
Anything works.
But when you're selling beer, do people ask you these questions, or is this Kaylin just a genius?
She's a big hip-hop fan herself, so like...
I am.
Yeah, she knew all the stuff that Def Jux put out before. I ran a record label, and so I used to buy... We used to carry those... A record store, excuse me, and we used to carry those records, and so I bought some of them. We were listening to some of that stuff today. We were listening to Cannibal Ox, awesome. Oxtrumentals in the tasting room while we're treating it like our office, but I don't know. It's a lyric from somewhere I can go. I don't know where it is right now. I'm sorry.
That's good. And what are some of the names for Long Island City Beer Project beers?
So a lot of our names are like odes to street art. Dan, the owner, is big street art fan, big Basquiat fan, so... Samo, Pile of Crowns, those are all Basquiat pieces. Hollows was a graffiti piece with the outline
I remember Samo.
Yeah, Samo's.
Yeah. I didn't know that. See, this is what I'm trying to find out about you guys are out there.
Yeah.
So you're Interborough's identity is based on hip-hop lyrics.
Yes.
Ours is
a little bit of street art.
And other things, but... I don't know if you've ever seen our cans. Obviously, street art inspired.
Cool. And Thomas?
Yeah, she nailed it. Street art, Queens, especially. High Vernon's kind of a flagship IPA for us, and that's 5 points if you remember the area where the kind of legal place to tag, world famous. They tore it down, and there was a group that was trying to salvage it, and they called themselves the Institute for High Vernon. And so it's kind of our ode to that.
And you guys want to pop your next beer? And we'll try that too. Yeah. And Johnny.
I looked it up. It's Public Enemy, just to get it out there.
Okay. It's not the Smiths.
No.
I didn't think Jesse would name a beer after the Smiths.
Yeah. Laura likes the Smiths. So do I.
Was that like a bris at a... That was, something I've read about that's not sanitary. The way this guy opened a beer, I don't know. Just put his mouth on the top of the bottle.
It's hot out there.
Sucked it off. But all right. Thank you, Thomas. Learning things about... So Thomas made one of the finer beer sales presentations to me a month ago. He came in with all these little mini bottles of freshly tapped
beers. Bag of them right here.
Yeah, show us. Tell us what your strategy is, because it's different. Some people come out with cans. You know, when you're selling beer, Keith, you guys, how do you usually sell beer? You have some samples, or you just have cans, or what?
I mean, if it's, walking in sort of unannounced, because normally if it's a sampling, like we would have talked about ahead of time, we would have bought specific samples. However, if it's more unannounced, I have just a full brand catalog that we run through all of our breweries. There's a lot to cover, and I want to make sure that none are left unturned, so to speak. So it's more of a walkthrough, and our reps have the knowledge of, the specific styles and beers themselves of each brand, so they can walk through each of them and get a feel from the buyers at the specific bars. Everyone is extremely different, so you never know who's going to buy what. So we walk through these catalogs and discern the certain styles and what people are interested in from there. So it's more of a broad spectrum coverage of exactly what we cover, and then we try to narrow it down from there.
But Thomas, so you guys at LIC Beer Project, you bring like those little medicinal jars.
Yeah, we found we have these, you can't see because this is radio, but we have these little 8 ounce kind of, they're literally medicine bottles, and we buy them from a medicine supplier. Reason being is they have kind of a conical cap that holds the carbonation really nicely, and they're small bottles, so you don't waste a lot of beer. And you can carry a lot of them to accounts. So
what do you fill them from the?
Yeah, right from the go to the tap room, fill them right from the draft lines or from the tanks themselves. So yeah, fill a couple from.
We use a counter pressure growler filler at Interboro, and we've been looking for a bottle that has the same threading. You know what I mean? To go into the connecting piece, and Jesse told me that over another half they use these. Blank barbecue sauce bottles that have the same stuff that you walk around like with salad dressing bottles, and I was like, that's cool, I would do that, but these are cool. I like those a lot.
Mesquite IPA.
Yeah. Yes,
I use all bottles. I hate driving in New York City, so I'll in the wintertime I'll wrap my clothes up around the bottles, and then I'll have all my laundry and the beers together, and that's an easy way. And today I have a cooler with ice because it's summertime, and full of beer, and then I have a backpack with my clothes in it, and just where the world takes me, I end up, and I just keep the bottles with me.
And I bet you always have beer, Johnny.
Always, dude.
Yeah. And then, so what beer is this, Kaylin?
This is Fervent. So we were talking about sour beer before. We have the first cool ship in New York City. So this beer is an open fermented saison. It was fermented in our cool ship for a week, but we pitched PDO, lacto, and our house saison yeast, and then it went into oak Chardonnay.
Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a year, and then in the bottle.
So Thomas, are you the heads? What's your structure here? You've you're sales, Caitlin sales.
We're She's even.
My sales manager.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. We do the same thing. We sell the beer together. We make decisions together. We name beers together. It's not a very lateral kind of brewery. It's really nice. So there's 10 of us, and we kind of all have the same say. So
is there 10 of us now?
Yeah.
What do you guys look for? I don't know if you're hiring anyone, but when you hire someone to be a salesperson, what are you looking for? What qualities?
Personality is everything. Believe it or not, salespeople are kind of hard to find. So being able to hold a conversation is kind of like square one, and that's kind of hard to find. Someone who loves to drink the beer and is passionate about the beer that we make and the vision that we're heading is very important. There's only two of us doing all this work, and we want to keep it small. That's the idea.
And then, Caitlin, some of the other beer reps you mentioned, like Anthony at Other Half, and you brought in Jay from Interboro, what are some common themes that you guys – have to deal with?
I think
in New York City,
we all just really love beer. The New York, it's such a fun time to be in the New York City beer community right now. There's so much beer, so much good beer, and there's really, it's a community. It's really, we're all friends. We're not competing. There's a space for all of our beer. There's certain places that certain beers will do better at, and we're all genuinely a small, very tight-knit community.
Johnny, I'm looking at Johnny. He's ready to say something. No, he's not.
So I've been in New York with a homebrew cooler for about 5 years, and I've noticed an explosion in this town. Philly was light years ahead of you guys back 5-6 years ago. And there's been a huge explosion in New York City with craft, with different styles, different variants. I mean, it was very much a German town, a Pilsner town, and a lot of bars were, whatever. They were just pouring the same thing all the time. And I've seen it. And the place I can attribute all this coming from is the same place I come from, which is homebrew. And I see a lot of the breweries now, they're starting up, or the homebrewers that I used to know in the homebrew community here in the city, like the KCBC guys and Fifth Hammer with Kuzme, and a lot of places that so I feel like it's a very organic place for such a big city. It's not coming from without, it's coming from within. Very inspiring, very cool. I love the New York beer scene right now. Really enjoy being here.
I think it was really underserviced, though. I mean, this is a huge population that we have here, and the number of local breweries that were existing it didn't kind of measure up to a town like Philly, Or if you look to the greater Boston area, there was a lot more breweries and a more densely packed number of breweries in a lower population area. And I think there's plenty of room for everybody. Like Caitlin was saying, there's so much good beer out there now. I think there's room for everybody, basically. It's the big guys that are probably going to take the hit. But that's fine. They got their fingers in every pie anyways.
A lot of breweries don't want to come to New York City because they're afraid they're going to be drunk dry. They're afraid, sure. They're going to be the big thing. And then, and I've seen it, you see a brewery come to town and all of a sudden they kick up a production and they disappear from town and they keep up with their thing. We do production only, so we're able to keep up with demand in all our markets. And some people, once the brand's built somewhere else, they have to keep up with demand in their tasting room. All the beer goes there. That's where the sexy money is and all that stuff. So we're really trying to support this market in every market we're in, for sure.
And how are you guys at LIC Beer Project? What's your mix between like your tasting room and what you're doing wholesale?
Yeah, it's actually more even than we were anticipating. We were kind of figuring we would be more of a production facility and ramp up. And whilst we were still doing that, the tap room is very busy. And we're in Long Island City in Queens and very industrial area. And I would be afraid to walk there at night before this brewery popped up. But it's amazing. I mean, the tap room, the dollars that come through the tap room is fantastic. And that does drive our brand in the city and elsewhere. So it's kind of a, I would say almost like a 50-50 split at this point.
Yeah. So a general question is, how do you guys deal with new releases? You know, like so many breweries have new beers coming out all the time. You know, how do you do that? Are you doing pre-announcements? Are you doing, you know, pre-orders?
Yeah, they'll utilize social media. Primarily, I think we're using Instagram, I think photographs and short captions, you know, speak 1,000 words more than, you know, kind of plastering all over the place. But, you know, it's also user-driven. You know what I mean? Like, the people are anticipating, and, like, I'm a big grassroots believer myself. So when people come through, they're like, what are you guys going to be doing next? And when they're in our tasting room, we tell them what's in the tanks right now. And then they get a notion of when they want to come back. And we'll be like, we'll be releasing that in a couple weeks. Like, we're canning every 2 weeks, basically, now. So people kind of know we have a schedule.
We're kind of on the same schedule. And what I have noticed, because I work a lot of the releases, I'm there actually selling the beer, is that when all these New York City breweries have releases, people will drive from long distances and hit all of them.
Yeah.
So they make a day of it. So it's kind of good for everybody. There's no real competition.
Wow, that's cool.
I don't release any new products. I've been brewing for 17 years, so I don't need to learn how to brew on the job anymore.
We'd say that again one more time, John.
I don't release any new products.
And we're all supposed to laugh.
I've been brewing for 17 years, so I need to learn how to brew on the job. I believe in the four brands we have and what they can do. We're cross-promoting the blueberry beer with wine bars, and we're cross-promoting the strawberry beer as a cocktail base to try to bring back drinkers from those markets. There's longevity play to Sejan, and that we want to educate consumers about sour beer through that like Sejan hashtag and like do a Twitter thing. And then the Funky Prowler is its own animal that people aren't really used to a sour style, but once they have it, they don't know what's happening. I'm old school. I've had four brands in the four packs for 15 years from Sierra Nevada and Victory and all these breweries, and I think we're creating a four pack that's going to get better and better and better. So we're just working on the four brands.
Wow, all right. You know, so many, you guys keep talking. You guys are awesome. I'm going to read something that's fun. You know, we're here to talk a little about jobs. Keith, quickly, you know, you're like a manager and a distributor.
I have five reps that I oversee within Southern Manhattan. So I am hitting the streets as best as I can, but my job is more so oversight of these reps to make sure that they're on their game.
And how do you keep track of them? Looking at sales numbers, what are things that you say you have to do this?
I mean, I am a rep at heart myself, so I don't like to necessarily have my nose deep into numbers day after day, but to a certain point I have to keep up with the amount of, you know, case equivalents everyone is selling, the amount of distribution points, all that fun stuff. More so, it's just constant communication with the reps and being on the ground with them. I'm walking door to door with them as often as I can. And frankly, I'm building relationships myself. So it's not as if I'm completely behind the scenes. My job is to just make sure that we have our reps selling as much of the portfolio as we can. In the distribution world, we need to make sure that, yes, our big brands are the ones that break into these accounts where they need some, they're a bit less focused on the taste or whatever. They just want the best deal or whatever it is. But we wouldn't be as successful if we don't really reach the market with brands like Johnny's, for example. It's a specialty product, yes, but it can be sold everywhere, and it's just a matter of convincing these people that it can be done. So it's just making sure all my reps walk in every door, more or less, whether it's a craft beer bar, which, frankly, I think we all like hanging out in. I do personally do, but it's about the Italian place next to it. It's about the Spanish restaurant next to it. You never know who's going to buy what. So I do my best to walk door-to-door with them, but to make sure that everyone is trying to sell as much product as possible and leaving no stones unturned is the gist of what I try to do and how I keep myself busy.
This is a tough show for me. I'm trying to get, like, the sales guys are good at talking about their brands, and I'm trying to get you guys, like, go deeper and talk a little bit about your craft. So I'm also trying to focus on jobs in the industry. So here's a job posting that came in Facebook today. Beer job posting is for the Hudson Valley. If you're up there, up near Hudson, New York, there's a job, and it's from our buddies at the Germantown Beer Farm, home of Hudson Valley Malt. They're looking for an assistant maltster. So this is like a entry-level position. There's 26 hours to start, and the job includes, this is like what the other jobs are besides sales, production of malt, monitoring of quality control standards, malt house and hop yard maintenance, and miscellaneous projects. Heavy lifting is required. So, you know, you're supposed to go to the Germantown Beer Farm on Facebook, and you can talk to them about it. But, you know, the funny thing, you hear about these all these jobs in the industry, you know, heavy lifting required, that tells you something, doesn't it, Keith?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. You see it on every single posting ever. Everyone has to pick up a keg at a certain point. So.
But there are buddies, and if you got a job posting, we're going to start reading them off every week. Because for us, number one with Beer Sessions Radio, we want to get into the bones of this industry.
Well, Jimmy, I hire people, and I train people. So when you talk about jobs in the industry, I especially sales, like out here on the street, the one thing you can't train is sales. Either you can sell or you can't. Everybody here can obviously sell. That's why we're in this room. But it's a knack you have to have. When I look into how to train someone, how to develop them, I try to get inside their own style, their own personality. Everybody has their own way, you know, and I ride around with SKI reps on a day-to-day basis when I'm in town. So I get a ton of exposure to different sales techniques, different sales tactics. At the end of the day, it's kind of like slimy and creepy in a way, in that you want the end result to be a purchase, but you also have to be a real person that they can connect with, especially in the beer industry. So you have to have a multi-layered functionality to you as a human being, to where, yes, you're going to get your results, but you're also going to stay true to your character and true to, like, honesty and integrity and things like that, and true to belief in a product that you're carrying. So I have a rep, full-time rep in Philadelphia that I've been training for a while, and I have a salesperson in Florida as well, and I'm looking into reps up in upstate New York, and I'm trying to hire those and trying to train those. So I get inside their technique, and I try to work with them in a way that they can perfect themselves. And I find that honestly, the Carnegie principles to remain true. You know, it's about letting the other human ego speak, letting that person talk about what they're into, ask a lot of questions about the bar, how long you've been here, what, you know. And I find that if I'm in a sales call for 45 minutes to an hour and a half, I'm getting an account. You don't know a bar till you close it. You don't know a bar until you get drunk with them. And those are two things that you have to do as a sales rep if you really want to get steady lines and learn the industry.
Well, so. Two weeks ago, you came out to Jimmy's number 43. I had a little injury, so I had black eyes. And
my mom might be listening to this, Jimmy. Be careful.
Next thing you know, Johnny had his friend put black eye makeup on, and we had a raccoon club, and yeah, we had fun. Exactly. So you walk the talk, right?
Yeah, you have to make a human connection, and you have to make an emotional connection with that human. And you have to also be a person who can carry that connection long term, in that you're going to come back, and you're going to remember those moments, and you're going to share those moments together again, and you're also going to build new ones.
Awesome. So. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in another segment on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member, we get special member benefits. Justin Kennedy has a great question for the salespeople here.
Hey, I was just wondering if you guys ever run out of accounts to sell to, like if you ever just kind of saturate the entire market, or if you have places you will not sell to, and you can name names if you want to.
Great. Go for it. Caitlin's ready. Go for it.
No, to both of them. I think there's endless amounts of places to sell to. going back to what you were saying, though, I just want to say also, I think a really important part, not just about relationship with the bar owners, is relationships with the product that you're selling. This is my first sales job ever, and I think that the most important part is being passionate and loving what you're selling, not just, I think we both wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, you don't need a salesperson to sell beer. Relationships is everything. Caitlin, we hired her because she's wonderful in her beer knowledge and excitement about it. So sometimes it's better to hire somebody that doesn't know what they're doing and just can be trained. It's hard to undo things that, you know, people have their notions.
And then sometimes you have to just kind of like go above and beyond. Like you had, tell us about some of the events you worked on for Queens Beer Week, or last week you were at the WQXR event.
Yeah, that was so much fun. I actually didn't realize how much fun I was going to have. I was telling you, I didn't know how much I loved classical music. Yeah, of course, going above and beyond. There's no place I'd rather be than working in this industry and meeting the people I get to meet and drinking the beer I get to drink, and I feel very fortunate.
Jay?
I think the answer to the question that was posed is there are millions of people here in New York. Our company is only several months old. We're doing our own self-distribution, and we're not going to run out of places to look to sell beer. I mean, there's all this radiation of beer going out into neighborhoods that weren't offering these kind of options before. And so as the people move into these neighborhoods that are consuming these sort of products, establishments will open up and the people will be there to want to feature them. And so I think the horizon line is really positive, and I think, you know, already established businesses are kind of waking up to several elements of like good craft beer being a part of what they're offering. As far as like accounts that I won't sell to, I mean, it's not so much. I mean, if you don't pay, that's bad. So we can't do that. But after that, it's more about finding the establishments that are like, the last thing I want to do is go in there and pressure somebody into purchasing product from me and then not having their customers enjoy it. Then it's gathering dust in their establishment, and the product isn't going to be at peak consumption performance. And then it's like, okay, there's something wrong with your beer. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with our beer. It just wasn't correct fit for here. And so I think kind of recognizing that out of the gate. And one thing I guess I also feel like, too, before I worked for a distributor, and I used to have hundreds of labels to sell, and now I'm working for a manufacturer, and we're selling a few at a time. And so that kind of focus for me is pretty exciting, because then I can just kind of really bore into talking about exactly what we're doing and give the timeline about what's going to be coming out from us, because we're only a few months old. We haven't decided what our flagship products are. So we're putting them out there and letting people consume them, looking for the feedback in our tasting room and from the accounts. And I think it's kind of like it's a new operation for us. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun going forward, but we're not looking to sell beer out of town. We just, like, anytime soon, we would rather have this huge population here consume it all for us and kind of just go forward with that path. But, you know, there's a whole cast of characters out there at these accounts. Like, people are, there's all sorts of spots. And like, you're a character, Jimmy. I mean, you're awesome. And, you know, you were one of the people, like, when we were, like, lining up what we want to do, like, where are we going to go first? And you were, like, right at the top of the list, because, of course, we all have come and done the radio show, and Jesse and Laura knew you, and we just were like, this is, you know, it's a fun scene, and it's expanding. I guess that's the other element. Like, the neighborhoods are expanding for good beer in New York City, where I'm selling more beer in Queens than I did when I worked for American. You know what I mean? I'm selling more. I didn't do a lot of work in Manhattan, but it's like all these spots are continuing to open up, and like, that's part of their business model. So I think the future is pretty bright for what we're all doing.
I think the answer on the distribution side is a very different world. You know, your breweries are both great, and I've visited the tap rooms, and I've really enjoyed the liquid. Our distributor has been around for 30 years now, and we're at the point where we've walked into every door, and there are a lot of grudges out there between, you know, whether it was a rep 10 years ago who accidentally dropped the keg the wrong way, or someone didn't pay on time. There's so much that goes into it. Obviously, we need to make sure our reps walk in every door, because we have something from all these different countries, whatever it is that this bar can sell. But it's a whole different story when it comes to introducing, oh, I have this new beer. They'll say, I don't work with your company because of this one thing you did to me 10 years ago that I don't even remember what it is, but I'm going to hold it against you. So in the distribution world, it's about And I really agree with Johnny when he said that not everyone can be a salesperson. I wholeheartedly agree with that. You know, everyone can be a relationship builder, and that's what it is. I mean, being a relationship builder is the key to sales, and not everyone can do that. It's just the fact of the matter. You can train people to be better salespeople. However, it's one of those things you either have it or you don't. So we're just trying to make sure that our people not only put themselves in the best light to make a sale, keep walking in every door, and as often as we can, convince people that that keg we dropped 10 years ago isn't the worst thing in the world. Can you please buy our beer and support our business?
I have a very extreme niche product, and that I'm only making sour beer. I'm only making four brands. So I go after cloth. If an establishment cleans their glasses with cloth, that I like to be in them. I go after the culture, the clientele. If they've educated their consumer on what we're doing, there's not a new Rolex every day. So we're launching a prestige brand. We're not a cheap price point. We're the one you're going to pay for. And there's a lot of effort that goes into these beers, so we have to keep that there. So we go after the prestige places and, you know, the James Beard things, and everybody is kind of in that, that model. Some of those doors have been closed previously by Ski, and I'm going to knock them open. But, you know, if the buyer doesn't like the liquid, I'm okay with that. I just say thank you, thanks for your time. You know, it's not for everybody. And the last thing, like Jay said, is I don't want the kegs to sit. I don't want the beer to sit. I want things to evolve. I want things to move. Our cultures last for 3 years. Bottles can sit forever on shelves. That's not the problem. The problem is I want people actively involved in the process. I want to educate a consumer. We offer a lot of staff training. Myself, I do it personally all the time, you know, to get people educated. I mean, I did a staff training at Wegmans in Philadelphia with 10 staff members, and 8 of them had never tasted sour beer before that morning, you know. So there's a lot that goes into sour beer. And sour beer to me is all about education, all about knowing what you taste and knowing why you taste it and knowing how the flavors should affect you.
Yeah, so. And then this beer, it's a sour stout.
Funky Prowler?
Tell us about it. Come on.
So we had four flagship brands at the gate. One of them was Taste My Place. Taste My Place was like our Goose program. So that's a very limited release, and we're building up to a 3-2-1-year blend, which we're not there yet. So I pulled that out, and I put in Funky Prowler. Our artist, Keith Griman, is in a band, and Nick Apice are from Nice Futures, but he's in a band called Prowler. So we had a lot of fun with the name. We kind of have a music theme on the label, and we do, like, release shows with it, and we pour the Prowler for free, and people come and watch the band play. We have a blast with this product. It's a dry Irish sour stout. I love dry Irish stouts, and, you know, I'm so infected right now. I couldn't make a clean beer if I tried. So we made a dry Irish sour stout called Funky Prowler. It's unique in that, like, you smell the roast, you smell the coffee, the tobacco, the deep notes of the roasted malts themselves, but then it goes into like a black cherry thing, and then it comes back and it finishes dry and stouty. So it's a really fun beer in that it prowls around and it plays with your tongue. And I also enjoy, like, we really struggle with getting the stout body in the beer and getting the mouthfeel to be that of a stout and also have the acidity in there, because acidity will thin out the liquid really hard. So it's a tricky beer to make, but we have a blast with it.
Okay, Caitlin and Thomas, so LIC Beer Project. So where would you like your fantasy placement for some of your beers, where would you like to get your beer in that you're not? Could be anything, anywhere. You don't think about those things.
Yankee Stadium.
Yeah,
that's a tough question, because I think we're in a lot of the really great places that we want to be. People who want our beer, that's who we want to have it.
Yeah, going back, if you're a dick, then we're not going to sell you beer. You know, if the beer sits and you treat our product poorly, we're not going to sell it to you. I mean, you guys, everybody here, they're so passionate about the thing, and you have complete control from the very beginning all the way to the you know, when you send it out the door. And if someone's going to, you know, not treat it how it should be treated, then, you know, F you. Like, you don't get to have my beer. So that's who we don't sell to, people who don't respect the product and don't respect what we do. But we'll sell it to anybody. Anybody who is excited about it and anybody who wants to drink our beer, happy to give it to you.
Great. And then we have one last beer. Johnny, what are you pouring now?
This is Mr. Blueberry. It's I was trying to make a liquid for the ladies. Had a lot of different names for it. And we ended up selling a Mr. Blueberry. So the label is a guy in a boat with a girl waving him down. And it's intended to be a boat beer, but it's also cross-promoted with wine drinkers. We use all real fruit in it. It's not cheap because of how much blueberries we have to use. We use over a pound per gallon. And but it's somehow sweet but dry. That's all I can say about the beers. There's magic in these cultures. When they advance themselves, when you blend them, when you use different processes, you can get to a really unique place where you have a beer that carries the sweetness of the fruit but also a dryness to it. And I'm really proud of the beer.
And then, like, Jay, for you, what's a fantasy account you'd love to be in?
I want to sell a Pock Pock. You know, that joint down on Columbia Street. I just love eating there, and I like their cocktails. I mean, we haven't really hit on it, but we're a distillery as well. And so I'd like to have some of our spirits featured down there and the food. I mean, it's hot out there Portland, right now. I want some really refreshing food. And, like, that's what I didn't eat there all winter long, and now I'm like, it's hot out there. I want to eat that sort of grub. And, like, I want some one of our really light beers in there, and then I want some of our booze in there so they can make some cocktails with it.
All right. Well, hey, anybody want to say anything else? We're going to close out soon. Caitlin, thanks for inviting everybody out.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, and tell us a couple other reps that you invited that couldn't come, or you would have invited.
Well, my friend Carrie works for Allagash, but she's at Allagash. And I invited Anthony, but I guess I'm not sure what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony's a great guy. We know him from. Yeah. I want to say some of the sales reps that we know in the city worked at beer bars. Like Anthony worked at Proletariat, and he's also run the tasting room at Other Half, and he delivers. So that's another side of it. A lot of the people have different hats and different jobs. And
I poach bartenders all the time.
Yeah.
We all have many hats working in small.
It's an incestuous business.
And Thomas, what did you do before this job?
Oh,
you're kind of new on the show, yeah?
Kind of, yeah. I've been here for 2 years. I've been with the company a year and a half. I was in California selling swimming pool stuff. So, like, I sold to contractors and massive business. I sold $10 million a year. And much like your steel business, I sold so much. I made so much more money than I do here.
He's so good. I want a swimming pool.
Well, that's the thing is I was willing to give that up for something that I like because, I mean, selling to, you know, crotchety old men who build pools for a living sucks. So here I am.
So who thinks is there a schmoozing technique that you need when you're a salesperson or you really think that sales is just natural and you're telling
the truth? I let the other ego expand itself, and then therefore they appreciate that feeling, you know. And names is the toughest part of this game. If I meet another Mike, it's a bartender, or another. I mean, like, there's so many common names in the industry. But if you remember someone's name next time you come in, that's a big part. I like to say the names and keep the names going.
Bar people are really real, and I've been in a bunch of sales gigs, and I was taught to be kind of a schmoozy guy and kind of a slippery dude. But in this industry, it's completely relationship driven. People sniff that out right away if you're kind of being slimy. So just remembering names, being nice, asking how their day was, just holding a conversation is everything. People will buy beer after that.
And being educated on what you're selling and really excited about it and get them to be as excited as you, because we're doing exciting things right now. And if you love beer, if you're a beer buyer, you obviously love beer. So
makeup, Jimmy. Makeup's number one for me. I mean, I close all my sales by putting raccoon eyes on.
You're good. You came out and you had a good time. And Jay, tell us, when's your next gig for your band? A lot of beer reps are actually musicians too.
Well, Jimmy, at one point you were trying to get us to record the opening sound for your show here. I don't run with those kids anymore. They're not my friends anymore.
I was going to say, I didn't know you were in a band.
Yeah. No. I mean, I get along with just about everybody. But
that'll be another show. We'll have all the guys and reps that have bands.
I play at home by myself now.
But you're a good one.
I play alone.
All right, everybody, we'll go around the room one more time. Say your full name and the place you're working at.
My name is Jay Seinhauer. I work at Interborough Spirits and Ales in Bushburg, Brooklyn.
And you make the Bushburg pills that I like.
My name is Keith Sansone. I'm a downtown sales manager for SKI Beer.
Johnny Leroy Compton III, owner and yeast guy for Highway Manor Brewing Company.
Of course he's the third. I knew that about you. Come on. And you used to wrestle with your brothers, and they'd beat you up, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Just did it at a bachelor party like 3 weeks ago.
I am Caitlin LaLoupe, and I am the Brooklyn Queens rep for LIC Beer Project.
And I'm Thomas DeRoche, and I'm the Manhattan rep for LIC Beer Project.
I'd say toast to everybody. Well, you know, one more time, I get to hang out with you guys and meet all good buddies. Johnny's a new friend, and Jay's an old buddy, and Caitlin and Thomas, thanks so much for coming on. And I'm Jimmy Carbone on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, intern Hillary Fasten, and our engineer extraordinaire, David Tatasciore. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.